يدخل خجالة.
Your Holiness, would you please give examples of how it is that the Tibetan tradition also preserves the Pali tradition? Do you mean more specifically the Hinayana tradition by way of including the monastic tradition of Mula Sarvastivadin?
That's Duo Lung, Lung Tishi. That's what I'm saying. Buddha Jungism. But Duo Lung Buddha Jungism. Jungism.
For example, the Vinaya section of Tibetan Kangyu, the monastic discipline section, has about 13 large volumes, and these, most of these texts are found also in the Pali tradition. And some other texts in the collection of Kangyu, such as the Udana Varga, collection of aphorisms, and some of these texts can also be found in Pali. Of course, I haven't done any detailed research, so probably, I mean, it would be helpful if someone can do a more kind of detailed research on this question. With impending ecological and social challenges compounding globally, what advice can you offer to encourage people to engage in compassionate social action? Social action layak tholaya simshu layak simgul thayak ji
to dilha galo gorda jujule thal galo gor.
What more can I say other than what Shantideva has said in his Guide to the Buddhist Atmosphere of Life?
Ta curious labi na
Of course, the issue of ecology and environmental protection, these are not very explicitly mentioned in the Buddhist texts. But in some sense, we can see in the early Buddhist texts quite a strong consciousness of the environment. For example, there is also a certain significance of the Buddha's own life story. When the Buddha was born, he was not born inside a palace, he was born in a garden. Similarly, when he attained his full enlightenment, and then according to some legends, you know, he was supposed to have been born from the right arm of his mother Queen Maya, which, you know, may be open to question.
So
The problem with that is that if the Buddha was born from the right, you know, under the right arm of Queen Maya, the mother, then you have to find a womb somewhere up here, and that would be biologically almost impossible.
More complication, huh?
And similarly, when Buddha attained the full enlightenment, you know, he did so under the shadow of a Bodhi tree. And if you look at Bodh Gaya countryside, there are caves around. I mean, Buddha could have attained enlightenment inside a cave, but he did not. It was under the shadow of the Bodhi tree. Similarly, when he passed away, he did so at the base of a tree. So there is a significance of tree even in the Buddha's life. And also I've read in certain sutras, particularly in the Vinaya sutras, references as to the need on the part of the Buddhist monastics to plant new trees around wherever they are residing, and also injunction upon the younger generation of the monastics to carry on taking care of these trees that have been, new trees that have been planted. And similarly, we can also find references in sutras where there are very explicit statements of Buddha's concern on the environment where people are living. So in some sense, we could say Buddha was a kind of an ecologist. The suffering of the people of New Orleans is weighing heavily on my heart. I'm not skilled yet in Tonglen. What can I do from a Buddhist perspective to help?
What is your profession? This was a profession because of the profession Shibe.
So depending upon what your professional background may be, it would be actually very helpful if you can go there in person, physically, and then make contributions, you know, based on your own professional experience. That would be the best. With relation to New Orleans, I don't know whether any Tibetans, you know, given that there's a small number here, any Tibetans have actually been there physically. But similar situations, several years ago, there was a massive earthquake in India, in Gujarat state. And at that time, a lot of Tibetans, of Tibetan volunteers, went to the state to assist in the relief work, and particularly on the rebuilding of constructions and so on. I was told that you know, in Gujarat, in the rebuilding work, there were quite a number of houses that were partially collapsed and partially standing, and a lot of people were quite afraid to even to, you know, walk into these places, and it turns out Tibetans were actually quite brave. I committed an error of speech which was hurtful to another person. My apologies and amends were rejected, and the offended person no longer speaks to me. Is there more that I can do beyond the practice of exchanging self for others and sending loving kindness? Generally, not accepting an apology when someone offers you is a form of a misdeed. So in this sense, the other person is in the error. So regardless of you know, this being the case, on your part, what is important is to continually persist in your you know, showing of affection, and it may take time, over time, maybe a month, several months and years, finally things may turn around. So if after several years still, you know, the person doesn't turn around, then maybe you can say go to hell. What is the result when a person gives money and knowledge to help others, but does so in order to get recognition and admiration from others, thus increasing his own sense of pride? So what is required is for a giving to be a genuine, to be totally free of any expectations of reward. Otherwise it becomes a kind of business exchange. So therefore, in the Bodhisattva practices, the Bodhisattva giving, a tremendous emphasis is placed upon an unconditional giving with no expectation for reward. Would you speak about your observations of religious fundamentalism in the world? What causes are leading to this effect? What can we do to make a positive
difference?
Normally I share my own personal observations, and I observe two main factors here. One is that at the root of religious fundamentalism is a lack of understanding of the value of other traditions, which is a result of lack of any contact with the other side. So this is one major factor. The other factor is that quite often there is too much attachment towards one's own religious tradition, where a religion becomes a kind of a... So the second factor is that the religion has to be understood as constituting a teaching whose primary purpose is to transform one's own mind. And if one fails to appreciate this point, then what happens is that one's relationship with religion, one's own religion, becomes that of an attachment, where religion becomes a label that you identify with. And here I once heard a comment made by a Chilean scientist who, in the course of the conversation, mentioned at this conference that although on the part of the scientific experts, it is very important to be very specific and detailed and objective in their research, but it is also important to ensure that the scientists themselves are not attached to their specific field of research. Which I think is very true, because as Chandrakirti points out, that, you know, although one should cultivate a deep sense of conviction in the validity of one's own philosophical standpoints based upon reflection, but at the same time it is important not to be attached to it, to one's philosophical standpoint. Therefore, otherwise one, you know, if you have attachment, strong attachment to your position, then you feel hostile towards positions that are opposite to to this. So these are the observations that I share with people. So the most importantly, there needs to be a much greater contact among the members of the different traditions. I am an 11-year-old boy. My dad said that he would give me $50 if I memorized the Heart Sutra.
Alex.
Do you think this is a good deal?
I think it's very good. Very good.
Looking back, when I was, you know, myself memorizing texts as a young child, my teacher, instead of keeping a whip next to him, perhaps if he had said, if you memorize such and such a text, I'll give you a couple of days of, you know, holiday, probably that might have been more effective.
Yeah.
These two questions are related. Towards the end of your talk, you mentioned the lineage, a tradition, but I could not understand the word, something like Nalanda. What is this Nalanda tradition?
Tari jaga lujun nal phaji yare da chum den de yang den da chare jele ya ta thure so 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 ya ji so le thuru da thuru so 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 le da ji nang chu jin ju pe so na ya ge thuru ro khashi to wa ta jin nang shuk che ju na le de sha kya ba mong gu shu chan de ya ji ane lekshe song ne mang shi phaji de chung chung so le.
If you look at the history of the development of Buddhist thought in India after the following the death of the Buddha, you can see that within this historical development, Nalanda monastic tradition, monastery, the period really seems to represent the high point of the development of Buddhist thought. And this particular period seems to represent a real flowering of Buddhist thought, and during which there has been great innovations and composition of great Buddhist classics and so on.
When a chief brigamal shila, that the Bataka Shabuchoin body. Did you do, yeah? Nalendra, that cabba, shunzam, simba, that's literally condition as well. Nalendra, Tagan turned the cabbe, shunzaba sam, any page that? Better session, better umurum give a dawas at the idea. Hanum Lingden, the so Lingden, the page is just a dead search. That did Rangubalian, those who has been doa. Chidan, Umabe, the Kuntaya, the Dotacheche, Aine, Randogi, Dogon, what Tada Mendaz Page on the day. That then the day, that's up to a child. Dan is Kenji, she was a page and a negative Umarangu was a sturdy, Page, Page, she was a member.
So in India, of course, later there were great monastic centers of learning such as Vikramalashila. But if you look at the role of Vikramalashila, it's not so much innovations, but rather the continuation of the tradition that was initiated in the Nalanda monastery. Whereas in the Nalanda tradition, you find genuine original masters such as Baba Viveka, whose interpretation of the Madhyamaka and Nagarjuna, of course, whose interpretation of the Buddha's teachings led to a flowering of a specific way of understanding. Similarly, among the interpreters of Nagarjuna, you have Baba Viveka, whose Madhyamaka Svatrantika standpoint, although has no specific sutras to to relate to, because it's the same sutra that the Madhyamakas use, but again, he developed a very novel interpretation and understanding of emptiness. Similarly, Shantarakshita, who is the innovator of the Madhyamaka Yogacara, Yogacara Madhyamaka, and so in these in the teachings of these great masters, you see real innovations based upon their deep intellectual understanding of the teachings, personal experience, and also a sensitivity to the need of specific types of audiences and so on, practitioners and so on. So we see genuine innovations and original thinking in the Nalanda masters. So the admiration for Nalanda was so deeply rooted in the Tibetan tradition. For example, in Tibet, one of the largest monasteries is monastic learning centers is Drepung, and Drepung is sometimes referred to as the Tibet's Nalanda or Tibetan Nalanda. His Holiness was saying that he hasn't heard the same epithet used to Sarah or Ganden. What would a direct experience of emptiness be like? So I will recognize it when it occurs. One of the key quality of direct experience of emptiness is that all perceptions of duality will cease. So there will be, you know, not a trace of dualism in one's perspective. So in our case, when we meditate on emptiness, this is certainly not the case. You know, dualism and dualistic perceptions and perspectives are still persist. So which is a proof that we haven't arrived there yet. Actually, about this reminds me of a story. About 40 years ago, I met a Westerner, and who told me that in his dreams he constantly dreams about having visions of various Buddhas, you know, many Buddhas in his dreams. So he was asking me. He said, "It seems that I've attained the first Bodhisattva level, the Bhumi." And so, of course, politely, I did not say that you haven't. I could not contradict him. But I told him, gently reminded him that alongside having visions of, you know, many Buddhas, there are also many other associated qualities of the first Bodhisattva level mentioned, such as the ceasing of dualistic perceptions and so on. In America, there is a general denial to the fact of aging and dying. What practice would you recommend to overcome this denial?
Namjita chik dash how old and do they are that the
Of course, if one adopts a much more realistic outlook on life, then these problems would not arise. Now we are returning to Shantideva's text, having explained the need to exchange self and others, and then having explained how this is possible, then Shantideva goes on to compare self-cherishing on the one hand and the cherishing of others on the other, the pros and cons of these two forms of cherishment. So this begins from verse 125. Shantideva says that if I give this, what will be left for me? Thinking of oneself, the way of the evil ghosts. If I keep this, what will be left to give? Concern for others is the way of heaven. So he then goes on to compare the pros and cons of these two forms of cherishment, the cherishment for oneself, the cherishing self and others. And particularly in verse 127, we read, wanting what is best for me, a stupidity in lower realms result. Let this be changed, applied to others. Honors and the realms of bliss will come. So what Shantideva is pointing out here is that if in the course of pursuing self-interest and cherishing one's own welfare, if one goes to the extreme of exploiting others or being totally oblivious to others' welfare and disregarding the impact of one's action on others and so on, this will lead to all sorts of disasters, not only in this life but also in future lifetimes as well. And then he goes on to explain, enslaving others, forcing them to serve me, I will come to know the state of servitude. But if I labor for the good of others, mastery and leadership will come to me. And then, having compared the pros and cons of the two forms of cherishment, then he then gives a summation where he states that whatever joys that exist in the world arise on the basis of cherishing others. Whatever sufferings there are in the world arises on the basis of self-cherishing. And then furthermore, he says that what more needs to be said? Simply compare the status, the difference between ordinary beings like ourselves, who embodies the self-cherishment, and the enlightened Buddhas who embodies the cherishment of others. Then in verse 31, Shantideva writes, "If I do not give away my happiness for others' pain, enlightenment will never be attained, and even in samsara, joy will fly from me." So the point he's making is that if we are caught in this bondage to self-cherishment, then there is no possibility of attaining Buddhahood at all. And furthermore, even in samsaric existence, so long as we are chained to self-cherishment, there will be no potential for happiness, even in the samsaric world as well. So if you turn that around and relate that to the thought cherishing the welfare of others, we can say that if we cherish the welfare of other sentient beings and act according to that, then not only will we open ourselves to the attainment of Buddhahood, but even in the samsaric world, this will open door to happiness. So those who act according to the cherishment of others, from that very day when you switch the mode of your being from self-cherishment to a cherishment of others' welfare, from that point onwards, one could say that the true happiness has begun. The day of the true happiness has begun. It has also opened the way for lasting peace and tranquility, and it has also opened for a perfect auspiciousness, an auspicious life. So, in fact, if you think deeply in this manner, then you will be able to really relate to Shantideva's statement, where he says that by riding the horse of bodhicitta, the awakening mind, to travel from a place of joy to another place of joy, what intelligent person would be tired, would be exhausted by such a journey? And this is very true. One can then relate to these kind of sentiments. So, in fact, if you think deeply, by living one's life according to the ideals of altruism and cherishment of others, one can then truly feel that the very purpose of my existence has been fulfilled. There is a purpose and a meaning to my being. And therefore, we find in Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, the line that in chapter 1, that the Buddhas, having reflected over numerous eons, have seen bodhicitta, the awakening mind, to be the source of the Buddhas have, having reflected, contemplated over numerous eons, have seen awakening mind to be the source of benefit for all.
Mazu mizin alori ya jida moji bo ya di ta jian cha go le yo me ko dur moji bo yo ga da lu jin na ze san be ji zhan mi xi ba jian cha go le yo me ko dur de moji bo yo ga ba ta din de gi xian ji dan moji bo yo ya di ji di ene chen be jian le ju tu na ene moji bo ya xi ge mi du ba zhe sa ga da ka xi be ji xia ji xi ji luo zhong na lo ya ene ji ne de wo cuo su mo 편전나가 지금 탕하다지
So generally, we experience tragedy and suffering and pain when things don't go smoothly, when we encounter adversities in our life. This is when we experience suffering and pain and so on. So if there is a method by which even these adversities can be transformed into conditions for happiness, then truly such a practitioner will be totally immune to suffering and pain and misery, because what normally becomes the conditions for suffering and dissatisfaction are then turned into even favorable conditions, furthering one's spiritual progress. So if this can happen, then any experience, any circumstances, any events, every event and every circumstances can be a basis for furthering of one's happiness. Therefore, the great Indian Kashmiri master Shakya Shiri states that and makes the aspirational prayer, when happy, I shall dedicate my happiness for the benefit of all. May benefits and happiness pervade the entire space. When suffering, may I be able to take upon myself the suffering, the pain of all. May the ocean of suffering become dry. So what the Kashmiri Master Shakya Shiri saying is that normally when ordinary people, when we experience success, when we experience a good fortune, it tends to lead to a sense of pride, arrogance, and haughtiness, and also in some cases it leads to a kind of a lack of heedfulness. We are less careful, carelessness, and so on. So instead, when these happens, as explained yesterday, then the favorable conditions, which are normally supposed to promote individual's happiness, then become destructive, and then a situation of what you know Tibetans refer to as gods turning into demons have exactly happened. So instead, like just as instead, if one is able to take happiness in the way Shakyashiri says that when happy, we dedicate the happiness for the benefit of all, then even when you experience success and fortune, this is not going to lead to extreme elation or sense of excitement or haughtiness. Rather, one will be able to appreciate the happiness and then dedicate. Similarly, when you experience suffering and adversity, normally people tend to slide into a sense of despair and hopelessness, whereas as Shakyashiri points out, if we are able to confront suffering and adversity and then embrace it and then use that as the basis to take upon ourselves the suffering of all beings, then the suffering, instead of reducing us to despair, will in fact give us more courage and turn that into a positive opportunity. So when you think along these lines, then truly for a genuine practitioner, there is no room for fear for adversities and suffering. Similarly, Chekhapa, the Kadampa master Chekhapa, wrote at the end of his 7-point mind training, as a result of his having engaged in the combat with his self-cherishment and self-grasping, now he has reached a point in his life where even if he were to die today, he has no remorse. Shantideva then goes on to again point out the disadvantages of self-cherishment, and particularly in verse 1-3-4 he writes, all the harm with which this world is rife, all fear and suffering that there is, clinging to the eye has caused it. What am I to do with this great demon? And this is quite true. If you look at the thousands of years, several thousand years history of humankind, we will recognize that underlying, in this long span of human history, there are a lot of ups and downs and all sorts of events that have shaped the human history. But in this long history, if we reflect deeply, we will come to recognize that at the root of many of the disasters and problems in the human history are the afflictions. And particularly at the root of these afflictions are negative emotions. At the root of these negative emotions and afflictions are the twin forces of grasping to self, and also self-centeredness or self-cherishing. And it is through the joining of these two forces together which has then sort of propelled us and to the kind of creation of many of the disasters that we see in human history. So and we human beings not only fail to recognize the destructive nature of these twin forces, but in many cases we in fact reinforce them and embrace them and willingly promote them.
Rangjivan 다 산지베 쉐바치기 데니르베다 다도 즈버테다 담르 즈버 니부테 다 다도 소르베 아다 란시브르 즈버테다 아니 담르 즈베 덴지 다 데니르베다 즈버 니부테 다 풍지 자와 이버지 쉐르체 투 다도버도 마란조 다 즈버 니부테기 차요 즈분이부터 이게 그것은 찌르시면 이제 대회. 자, 이 대회 인도산에 또 다다 봐도 민음 순절이야. 대원 대화다 동해 민도가지 랑근 만개 여래디 이네 지 논주쟁 즈분이 이게 샹왕의 대회 인도 그도 들려 못 정말해. 자, 다자. 나 뭐냐랑 지 다랑 동해 민도가지 다 대원 대화지 인부 인도산에 다 동해래 타야 주다 땜도 때와 영해하기 탑시 만화지 작업인 것들 가려서는 이게 지월한 것들이 두것이 되어서 니인이 제발 또 소원을 주시니 다 지회 잡아 다도 좀 받아 아니 댄진 왜 니가 유를 장대하지 마샤 다 투배 잡아 아니 시행적으로 좀 진지되다 다도 매버다가 다운 이부터 마지막이 깨워 권한 권도 빼야 즉 다 신된 기부
So, for Buddhist practitioners, what is important is to recognize that the root of all of our downfall, personal downfall, is really the two graspings that lie at the heart of our being, the grasping at inherent existence of things, the self-grasping, and self-centeredness, the cherishment of one's own well-being. So at the root of all of our downfalls are these twin graspings, two states of mind. So it is important to recognize that up till now, although even in our dreams, we instinctively seek happiness, wish for happiness, and we instinctively wish to avoid suffering. And this desire, this disposition for seeking happiness and overcoming suffering is so deeply embedded such that even in our dream it occurs very naturally. Even though this is the case, but up till now we have failed in the fulfillment of this aspiration because we have allowed ourselves to be enslaved by self-grasping and cherishment, self-cherishing. And up till now we have not only been dictated by these two forces, but also, in some sense, we have fully complied with the dictates of these two forces without any question. So, what is important now is to recognize this situation and to understand that the current situation that we face ourselves in is a result of enslavement to these two forces, and then reflect upon what Shantideva said earlier, compare the difference between one's own self and that of the Buddha. So what, as Buddhist practitioners, we need to do is to dedicate all our efforts in reversing this and follow the examples of the Buddha, and from now on ensure that we do not become enslaved by the two forces, but rather cherish within our heart the welfare of other sentient beings by following the examples of the Buddha, and cultivate these altruistic aspirations where it hasn't arisen yet, and ensure that these, where it has arisen, does not degenerate, and seek ways to enhance and live one's life according to the ideals of such way of being.
Mm-hmm. 치트 메네 마다나 세고 봐 미니신 대대 당은 쉬워다 신주 동에 시시시 당이 샤로 당자다 샤노 다시 소아 차 당이 신주 왕주지 이중에버 세기로 심지 군주 마다고 당이 최지 샘미서 샤와 미가 소바이 랑주주로 증원이 대주 미가 소바이 텔러라고 참이리 대나 심지 소르차디 다가 룰로 지통화 대단전에 초내장 샹달라네 탐버쥐 다디 참지 심지 좀으로
So Shantideva then goes on to write in verse 135, if this eye is not relinquished wholly, sorrow likewise cannot be avoided. For if he does not keep away from fire, a man cannot escape from being burned. And then, and then he goes on, and then we read verse 139 where he writes, thus others will be now my chief concern, and everything I see my body has will all be seized and given for the use and service of all other beings. So at this point we will do the ceremony for generating the awakening mind. So for this ceremony, first of all, you should imagine in the place where the central tanka of depicting Buddha Shakyamuni is there. Imagine there is the Buddha Shakyamuni in real life, and imagine Buddha Shakyamuni is surrounded by the past Buddhist masters, such as the seven successors of the Buddha, such as Upali, Ananda, and so on, the great disciples of the Buddha. And then also imagine that the Buddha is surrounded by the Bodhisattva masters such as Maitreya, Manjushri, and so on, and also the great Indian masters of Nalanda tradition such as Nagarjuna, Arsanga, Vasubandhu, and so on. And also imagine in this congregation are, or in this assembly are around the Buddha, are the great lineage masters of the four Tibetan traditions, Sakya, Gelug, Nyingma, and Kagyu, the masters of the four schools. And since in this congregation there might be Chonang practitioners as well here, so then imagine the lineage masters of the Chonang school. And since in this congregation are followers of Chinese Buddhism, so you could also imagine the great teachers of the Chinese Buddhist tradition, which originally came from Nalanda. Then of course there are Vietnamese Sangha, so you can imagine the teachers of the Vietnamese tradition. So imagine that the Buddha is surrounded by this host of great lineage masters and teachers of the various Buddhist traditions. And then in their presence, as a preliminary to the actual ceremony of generating the awakening mind, we will perform the practice of the seven limbs. And for this, we won't do any specific recitation, but you should mentally perform the seven limbs, beginning with paying homage and making prostrations to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in this assembly that you have just visualized or imagined. And then the second limb is that making offerings to this great assembly, and here you imagine making all kinds of offerings, but more importantly you should make offerings of your own spiritual practices, realizations, and particularly the sense of commitment to the practice of bodhicitta, the awakening mind, great compassion, and cultivating the understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, the emptiness. And imagine making offerings of these spiritual practices to the great assembly. And then the third limb is the purification or confession and purification of one's negativity. And here you purify all the negative actions committed from your body, speech, and mind in general, and particularly any actions that you might have engaged in which hinder the development of bodhicitta and awakening of mind, especially those that involve causing harm to other sentient beings, adopting ill will, maintaining ill will or vengeance and a harmful intention towards others. You should imagine confessing these, declaring these, and purifying them. And then the fourth limb is cultivation of a sense of rejoicing. And here you rejoice in the virtues of all beings, and particularly the virtues of the realizations of the great masters and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, such as their realization of the six perfections and so on. And then this is then followed by so when you make the offering of spiritual practices, you should when you do the rejoicing, not only that, but also you should cultivate from a depth of your heart a sense of deep admiration to the great realizations of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, their attainment of bodhicitta, their realizations of the six perfections and so on. Cultivate a deep sense of admiration from the depth of your heart. This is then followed by the next limb, which is appealing to, making requests to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Buddhas particularly, to turn the wheel of the Dharma, and followed by appealing to the Buddhas who are wishing to enter into final nirvana, not to do so and remain present for the benefit of the beings, and which is then followed by the final limb, which is the dedication. And here you must dedicate all your virtues for the benefit of for the well-being of all sentient beings.
Mm-hmm.
So for the actual having gone through this reflection now, for the actual ceremony, we will recite the four stanzas on the sheet, not the Tibetan, but the English, three times. So we will all recite together. With a wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. With a wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate a mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. With a wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. So this constitutes generating the awakening mind in the form of aspiration. You should constantly remind yourself of this act.
Judaism, Islam,
So, among the congregation, there may be Christian practitioners and followers of Judaism and maybe Islam as well. So, those of you, you can call into your mind the memory of the teachers of your tradition, and then make a pledge that from now onwards, I shall implement in my life the essence of the teachings, particularly the teaching on loving kindness and compassion. And so from today onwards, I shall attempt, make all my efforts to try to become a better person. So as far as the practice of compassion and warm-heartedness is concerned, and this is common to all spiritual traditions, it's equal in all spiritual traditions. On the question of cultivation of the understanding of emptiness and dealing with self-grasping, this is of course a more complicated issue. And here there is a difference between Buddhism and other traditions.
So some of my Christian friends, even showing interest about emptiness, then I usually telling them, this is not your business. I think one very brilliant, one Indian lady, a few months ago,
This Indian lady told me that she seems to have really thought deeply about on the question of Buddha's teaching on dependent origination, and she told me that when you think deeply on the implications of the idea of dependent origination, then the concept of creator becomes very problematic.
She told me, I just remain quiet. she mentioned like that. So sometimes you see the different sort of philosophy, may become hindrance for one's own sort of what's it, belief. So therefore, it is better to keep somewhere.
So from 140th verse onwards, kind of spiritual practices that are aimed at enhancing the awakening mind.
Tangdu lenge ki daa di, simshen namda lhenshik tu kuen ne, 아니 다음에 봤더라 내주세요 어 디렸다 디 펭기도와 아니 안다 지금 또 산안을 쓰면 이니샤 펭기 디 쇼이엘이야 다이아윤과 있네 쇼직을 아니 다 님버디 랑신지 공부를 주게 다디 지금 배 가시오래 배 개드 배 당드 뽑아 쳐보 아재 사보 배 가시오래 배 랑둔 보식삼쟁이 직삼 다진이 추시대 쇼직대 냠타베 심진 겸매바 겸매바 아니 뚝진 나르베 심진 되리시삼니 아니 랑이 로수르네 우스테베이나 랑신기 냠타고 겸매바 겸매바 망소로 그 토리야 소소 랑수판 더대야지 용도와 샤서 제일대야지 용도와 되리시 토네 아니 다닌버디 토와르데나 차도 냠버드 되는 랜심 멤버드 되는 니해주시야 디자나 선생님의 평행해주시야
So from verse 140 onwards Shantideva explains various thought processes and practices that could help enhance our practice of cultivating the awakening mind and so in this respect the following particular stanzas there is a unique interpretation of that in Sakya Pandita's text, Elucidation of the Buddha's Intention, where Sakya Pandita explains a way of reading these passages from Shantideva's text, where you imagine once the other in terms of a superior enemy, or someone who is equal to yourself in standing and someone who is inferior to yourself and then kind of entering into a kind of a thought processes where we try to exercise our normal responses of jealousy towards the superior and competitiveness towards the equal and a sense of insulting towards the inferior and so on. And this particular text of Sakya Pandita, Elucidation of Intention, Buddha's Intention, is a wonderful work which it seems Sakya Pandita composed while he was in China, visiting China, along with Dogen Chogye Pakwa. And it seems that this was written in China to be sent to Tibetan practitioners and meditators and scholars. So this is a wonderful a comprehensive text which contains a specific lojong practices, mind training practices, but also the underlying stages of the path, the lamrim approach, as well as
salam,
and as well as descriptions of the various grounds and paths of the Mahayana path. So this is a wonderful text which Sakya Pandita has written. However, in my own presentation here, I'll be following the mainstream reading of Shantideva's text, which is found in many common Tibetan commentaries, and particularly I've received teachings on Shantideva's text from the late Khuna Lama Rinpoche, whose interpretation is also similar to the mainstream approach. Now, in this, according to this mainstream approach, what the following text suggests is a kind of a thought experiment where you imagine kind of dividing your own self into two components. On the one side is your old self, which is the embodiment of self-centeredness and self-cherishing. And on the other, you imagine yourself, which has already recognize the disadvantages of self-cherishment and have seen the advantages and benefits of cherishment of others, and then try to engage in a kind of a dialogical relationship. So what you do here is, in fact, a kind of a visualization can be quite helpful. So what you could do is to visualize your own old self, which is the embodiment of total self-centeredness, as looking very impressive, majestic, haughty, arrogant, and all the rest on the one side, and totally oblivious to others' well-being. And then visualize on the other side the entire sentient being, who are caught in the web of suffering, who are devoid of true refuge, who are devoid of ally, support, and so on, caught in the suffering. And then if you compare the two, and if you put your own new self, which has recognized the disadvantages of self-cherishment and recognized the value and benefits of other cherishment, then naturally, if you put these two opposite camps, naturally your neutral mind will naturally gravitate towards the sentient beings, and you will feel greater sympathy and affinity with this group. And so what you do is you take the side of the sentient beings and then try to practice thought experiment of deliberately cultivating a sense of competitiveness to the old self, or a sense of a jealousy towards the old self, and sense of creating ridicule, causing ridicule to the old self. And in this way, if you do the actual visualization, that can be very effective.
rola nyingji meben di chile yonde lomba yinzi, lomba yi, kaba dalo don de, ta, mongbe wangi, daja namla, ta, kasul pege, pe, kesur chik du, sa di shepe. Ta di, toa le minne, chado, sa da di impre.
So we read in verse 140, take others, lower, higher, equal as yourself. Identify yourself as other. Then without another thought or without any apprehensions, experience envy, pride and rivalry. So this explains the beginning of the actual practice of this thought experiment that explained earlier. And then Chandradeva goes on to explain how this is to be done. So here he explains in verse 141, he is the center of attention, referring to the old self, the embodiment of self-cherishing. I'm nothing, and unlike him, I'm poor without possessions. So what you are trying to do here is to set up the old embodiment of self-cherishment, your own old self, as a kind of a superior to oneself who has everything, and then trying to cultivate a sense of kind of resentment towards that. And then in verse 143, so if as a result of doing this, when you find that you have the old self, which is the embodiment of self-cherishing, has all the qualities and everything, whereas one's own self is lacking in these qualities, then Chandradeva says that in verse 143, what? A nobody without distinction, not true. I do have some good qualities. Then to reinforce one's own confidence, he points out that, you know, each of us has qualities, particularly the Buddha nature pervades all beings. And also he reminds us that in many cases when we speak about positive qualities and virtues and so on, we are using comparative evaluations. So one may be compared to other person less learned, but then compared to another person, one may be more learned. And these characteristics are relative evaluations. And then he goes on to explain how, in fact, many of the negative qualities, such as being degenerate in morality and so on, these things do not happen by our innate nature. These things happen due to our being under the power of afflictions, and it is the afflictions that cause us to do this. And then Chandradeva goes on to explain in verse 145, where he then sums up this practice of cultivating a sense of resentment towards the old self, by viewing that old self as possessing all the worldly qualities and excellences. And then from verse 147, Chandradeva explains the second meditation, where one imagines this old self, the embodiment of self-cherishing, as being equal to the oneself, and then on the basis of that, trying to deliberately cultivate a sense of competitiveness and rivalry with this old self. And then from verse 151, and it's the third stage of the meditation, where Shantideva explains the thought processes that are involved in viewing one's own old self as the embodiment of self-cherishing, as being inferior to oneself, and then based upon this, one engages in the practice of disparaging this inferior old self, and pointing out that this self lacks such and such qualities and so on, and in fact, instead of feeling jealous towards me, you should feel admiration for the qualities that this new self possesses and so on. So in this way, he explains the practice of engaging in these thought experiments. And then from, so this goes up to the end of verse
153.
And
연대 통해야지. 다 다리 아주 전부지. 왜 자처버려도 와. 그 성취시도 와. 사진이 뭐 인도자네. 개티큐 인도주스 랜드 참을 주나니 산제 표심 때문에 내가 진짜 줄미시. 대한 디들 샹다가 코어 차게 티고를 최진은 이제 잡아다 디신 샹랑 콤버티. 샹지 도신 샹네니 다그 룰을 지나와 대단 대니 초선에 최지 샹라 템버 쯧 다나 샹네 마르즘바 달라 예데베 루나 이 개가서 강여버 대탐절로 당 나이 편다로 배주치야 나이 캐는 두야 마인바 다 탐절로 아니 초네 아니 남가태 남가태도 조 심전나리였다 지야다 위야리 제베 대단 대니 초선에 최지 샹라 템버 쯧
So verses 154 and 155 can be actually related to the earlier part of thought processes, where this is the third part of the thought process where we are deliberately cultivating a sense of disparagement towards the old self as an embodiment of self-cherishing, as an inferior to oneself. You can also read these two stanzas as belonging to the latter section, where then we can read the reference referring to the self-cherishing itself. So in which case we read, I will wear his happiness away. I will always hurt and injure him. He is the one who in samsara did me mischief by the hundreds. So here, if we take the second line of interpretation, then this he would refer to a self-cherishing attitude and self-cherishment. So, what we find in 154 and 155 are in fact kind of an enumeration of the disadvantages of self-cherishing attitude. So Shantideva gives a kind of a list of all the disadvantages that self-cherishment leads to. And then in verse 157, we read, if indeed you had in former times embraced this work and undertaken it, you could not still be lacking in the perfect bliss of Buddhahood. And this is very true, for example, in the case of ourselves. If we have had the opportunity to be at the presence of the historical Buddha, and as a result, if we had taken this turn from self-cherishment to other cherishment, by now, certainly our situation would have been very different, and definitely a much better one. So, however, that is not the case. And as we read in such passages where beings who have not been tamed, despite the coming of incalculable Buddhas in the world and so on. So, which all points to the situation that we find ourselves today, where we are what we are today because of not having reversed that from self-centeredness to other-centeredness, from self-cherishment to other-cherishing. So at this point today, when we have the opportunity to recognize the need for this, we should truly appreciate the great opportunity and the fortunate situation that we find ourselves in, and appreciate this situation, and then turn our way of being from self-centeredness to other-centeredness. So in verse 159 we read, now be covetous for others' sake of everything you see that you possess, steal it, take it all away and use it for the benefit of others. So as a result of this recognition, we then need to in some sense take away all that the self-cherishing self desires, and take it away from this embodiment of self-cherishment and give it to other sentient beings. So all the things that we ordinarily do for the sake of fulfillment of this self, my welfare, my interest, my happiness, one needs to take all of that away and give it to other sentient beings.
자도 조준에 디디 랑치면 준비 진진이야 잠병하게 다 따로 떼체 다 처리 안 되고도 랑치면 준비 되게 땅 풍샤스 잠병하게 다 따대야 임벌이 디 따디디 잠병하게 따대야 디 공제 다 되는 말에 잠병하게 따대야 돼 근데 그러나 다지 셴의 미예가 다도 셴의 마와도 다네 편지 셴민시 다로 차도 지미지 들으시기 다 삼대바 디기 땅에 놓으셨어요 들으시기 삼대바 가르쳐서 다 지금 들려야 지금 가서 우리 차도 쳐야 차도 짐이시 당연히 대단 대지의 신지 두면 다로 줘로 당신 니는 지시지 당연히 뛰어넣 따버리지 신지 니에바 제발 양상기 정도 들으셔라 당연히 니에바 충세자 겨우망으로 저도 쇼 신지 차고 사주에 양기 차고 쓰이는 다음에 천지 타마다 전원 끊어 끊어지 니니 견제는 신디 루루 연대 채미드 디 연대 진내장 개장 미시 태서지 딱하다 랑진진이야 잠병마하게 딱 결혼된 얘기 빼 나도 나지 인사도 마치 알았어 제거래 너나 다하게 전지시 최지시한는 뇌세강 뇌지 심지어 전지시 등일하는 법을지 니니 양산 유주도 시집한테 미세지 방어 살배 추진도 무슨 직장 담대샤 대자 대단 내샤 신 대자 교육이 미셔와 대단 니니 왕자들 대련대나 차제 차 나디 저기 잠병하게 랑진진을 니미 되니 랑진진도 따져버린 말이야 다 니면 되니 수병하게 랑진진이야 다 거시기 하래
So, from verse 154 and 55 onwards, and particularly from verse 160 onwards, what Shantideva is explaining is various thought processes where you engage in a meditation, where you are in some sense in very polite terms and gentle terms, you are giving a warning to self-cherishment, saying that, you know, you have let me down in the past, you have done this. So in short, what Shantideva is telling us to do here is to gently warn the self-cherishment that from now on, you should deter from this obsession with self, doing everything for your own self, for your own happiness and so on, and turn from there to the cherishment of others. And so we read up to 168, where 167, end of 167, and from 168, then one changes the tone. Up to this point, one gives the warning to the self-cherishment in a very polite and gentle language. From this point onwards, the language becomes very harsh. So from verse 168, we read, of course. So from 168, we read, and so, O mind, if still you will refuse, though you have been so lengthily advised, since every evil has its roots in you, you are indeed now ripe for punishment. The time when you could do me harm is in the past and now is here no more. Now I see you. Where will you escape? I'll bring you down and all your haughty insolence. So what you are saying to the self-cherishing is that if you do not listen to the gentle persuasion and warning, then now I'm no longer going to tolerate the old ways, the old ways when you do whatever you want and enslave me is now no more. It's of the past. So what you're doing is you're really giving a very stern warning to the self-cherished heart, and I'm not going to tolerate anymore. And however, sometimes we do give this kind of warning to self-cherishment, and then in actual practice, we sort of very humbly and with the kind of a timidity follow its dictates.
Oh yeah, that's it, yeah. Lul, that's the example. Yeah, lul, yeah. The little child, the shoot.
全部这边一年的你的第一代他的娘们他们一般的其实现在轮的你用数叫我们去就这的心中你谁的钱就你都动才到说我这样对吧三的他们这就找不了一个月面呢天的吧睡前女女面的人用动当三百年吧叫我们就得准去把三百年心给如此啊看见你没人去把那驴给他捏过得完了什么意呢 三的元素，看这个统计学的人呀，可这个怎么样嘛？这是农民，农民得了，哎，他没就知道嘛？他搞不懂啊，结果、孽果、宿命果是，哎，那三的他们叫龙王一呢，他都全没写的，没写，他都成不嘛？他这里印度农民得了，让他没就写的，印度农民得了，牛毛糖，三百年吧，三百年吧，叫完就。 可是过了对面的，等你这一分钟三米些，台湾绿军对吧？你拍些各位没晓得，可是因为我们这边等于我们上不赢，他抄袭这样的，他们台湾太多些，绿军没有先进决策，没上手的没设备，你了继续打东征，虽然那么样的信仰来达到全国的绩效，碰上的这技能。
就会我这三面是绿的，看到这边也全面动员，你啥呢？结束下到空中，迅速的了继续下。大概你这个江巴们吃过少的，实际上，枪民、西藏人民呢，积极他了吃过些。但刘克莱们的下边呢，第一呢，他说的不给判断那帮文人制度呀，给要么我生意谈不如吃到刘克莱吃去呢。积极他了吃过些，可是没得错的，可是对外国家，该这些人下面呢，大概刚给伢娃吃。 可是，轮的对决不，得到大些影响呢？他只轮到了咱们军队这边呢，是不是他们这那个让那个绿茶拉开呢？绿军决定的是啥的？这里没印度，他大些，他大些影响呢？他们这让个绿这边，他那当我几米个？他大个枪买不了，找了片去绿当茶，他绿是不重要的，晓得不？他绿当中怎么的没晓得？些他管的是不是重要的晓得？他那离了年嘛呀？ 来自这些双茶子，但是轮的这个阶段中间、高原中间、南岳中间、七岳中间，你把蒙古带的，当然是南岳的，就是带的，你把蒙古带的的云南呀，来自这些双茶子，有些这个他说的，是中国有些的现象的，他这些双茶子，他东边双的，东的，那大概就不知道了。
And then from verse 174, Shantideva once again presents meditation practices and thought processes dealing with attachment to one's own body and physical needs because again one's experience of the sensual field can come in the way of the actual practice. So, and particularly he explains in verse 174 we read that therefore for the increase of my body wants
what's 74
sorry to the extent this human form is cosseted and safe from hurt just so to that degree it grows so sensitive and peevish so he explains how the extreme sensitivity to the body needs can actually come in the way of one's practice. And then furthermore, he explains that if one becomes enslaved to the physical needs, and particularly the sensual needs, then one will never be fully satisfied. And in fact, because the problem with greed and desire is such that so long as the individual does not possess some kind of ability to be content with, even if the individual may possess or own the entire earth, still there will be room for discontentment. So Shantideva was pointing out the limits of sensual gratification. And then in verse 178 and 79, he then explains that body by itself is a material phenomenon. It has no particular intention. So therefore, you cannot say the body is beneficial to me or helpful to me. Verse 184, Shantideva explains how by overcoming attachment to one's body and sensual needs, one can even reach a point where the Bodhisattva can be able to give one's body as to other sentient beings. And then at the end of the verse 184, he acknowledges that although a body is fraught with all these kind of disadvantageous characteristics, such as its proneness to sickness and aging and so on, but still a body is the basis for a lot of other achievements. So therefore, just as one would use certain mechanism for attainment of an objective, like an instrument, one would use it for achieving an objective, one should, despite all the drawbacks of one's body, one should use body as an instrument for achieving a higher objective. Then in verse 185, Shantideva sums up the the conclusion of all the meditation practices and reflections that he has covered earlier. So we read 185, "And so, enough of all my childish ways, I'll follow in the footsteps of the wise, recalling their advice on vigilance, I'll shun all sleep and mental dullness." And then we read in 186, "Like the Buddha's ears, in their compassion, I will take the burden, all that should be borne. For if I do not labor night and day, when will all my sorrows have an end?" And this is very true, because when we are talking about dealing with the pollutants of the mind, we are talking about a very challenging task. not an easy one, and something that would require a prolonged application of meditative practice. There is a statement in a sutra where the Buddha compares to the transformation of the mind to a situation where there is a very bitter tree of a very bitter fruit, and he says that simply by pouring a few drops of sugar syrup at the root of this tree is not going to have any change and not going to make any difference to the taste of that bit, you know, it's not going to be able to remove the bitterness of that tree. So in the same manner, our own mind, which is kind of, you know, soaked or permeated and soaked both inside and outside or throughout by afflictions and self-cherishment and self-grasping, and this mind is not going to, state of mind is not going to be purified or transformed simply due to 1 or 2 hours of meditative practice. So certainly this is a process that would require a very long application of a practice. And then Shalindeva goes on to write, thus to banish all obscuring veils, I'll bend my mind from the mistaken path, and constantly upon this perfect object I shall rest my mind in even meditation. So with that, the lecture is finished. So at the end, at the conclusion of the teaching, we are going to recite in English the 10th chapter, the chapter on dedication.
Your Holiness, Garshan Rinpoche asked that we include chapter 10, the dedication chapter, and in our teachings today, or the past 2 days, and asked if we would recite this. So we offer this dedication to you, to Shantideva, to the lineage holders, to Buddha Shakyamuni, and to all, for the benefit of all sentient beings. So I would ask that you join us in reading. You don't have to stand up, I've been told. We will stand up. We've been requested to keep it at a brisk pace because it's a lengthy dedication. By all the virtue I have now amassed by composition of this book, which speaks of entry to the Bodhisattva way, may every being tread the path to Buddhahood. May beings everywhere who suffer torment in their minds and bodies have, by virtue of my merit, joy and happiness in boundless measure. As long as they may linger in samsara, may their present joy know no decline. And may the taste of unsurpassed beatitude be constant and unbroken continuity
throughout the spheres and riches of the world, in hellish states wherever they may be. May beings fettered there, tormented, taste the bliss and peace of Sukhavati. May those caught in the freezing ice be warmed, and from the massing clouds of Bodhisattva's prayers, may torrent rains in boundless streams to cool those burning in infernal fires. May forests where the leaves are blades and swords become sweet groves and pleasant wooden. May the trees of miracles appear, supplanting those upon the hill of Shamali, and may the very tips of hell be sweet, with fragrant pools all perfumed with the scent of lotuses, be lovely with the cries of swan and goose, and waterfowl so pleasing to the ear. May fiery coals turn into heat bound, become a crystal floor, the crushing hills, celestial bodies, adorned with offerings, the dwelling place of the Buddhas. May the hail of lava, fairy stones and weapons henceforth become a rain of blossom. May those whose hell is be turned to lovers offering their flowers, and those engulfed in fiery Vetrarani, their flesh destroyed, their bones bleached white as Kunda flowers, may they through all my merit strength have god-like forms and sport with goddesses in Mandakini's peaceful streams. Why filth is this, I will ask, that grieves the henchmen of the deadly lord, the frightful vultures of the carrion crows? What noble strength is it that brings us joy and drives away our dreadful night? And looking skyward, they will see the shining form of Vajrapani. Then may their sins be quenched in joy, and may they go to him. And when they see the seething lava flood of hell, extinguished in a rain of blossoms, drenched in scented water, at once fulfilled in bliss, they will ask, how can this be? And thus the denizens of hell will see the one who holds the lotus. Friends, throw away your fears and quickly gather them. For who it is who comes to banish dread? This youth with bound up, gleaming hair, this loving bodhisattva, saving and protecting every being, whose power relieves all pain, increasing joy. Do you see the splendor of his house that echoes praises of 1,000 goddesses, the 100 gods who lay their diadems before his lotus feet, the rain of flowers falling on his head, his eyes moist with compassion? Thus may those in hell cry out on seeing Manju Kosha. And likewise, when through these my roots of virtue, they see the joyful clouds let fall their cooling scented rain, their obscurations cleansed by bodhisattva like Samandrabhada, may all those languishing in hell come now to perfect happiness. And may the stooping animals be freed from fear of being preyed upon, each other's food. And may the famished spirits have such joy as those who dwell within the northern continent. May they be replete and satisfied by streams of milk that pour from noble Lord Avalokiteshvara's hand. And bathing in it, may they be refreshed and cooled. And may the blind receive their sight. May the deaf begin to hear. And women near their time bring forth like Maya Devi, free from any pain. And may the naked now be clothed, and all the hungry eat their fill. And may those parched with thirst receive pure waters and delicious drink. May the poor and the destitute find wealth, the haggard and the careworn joy. May confidence relieve those in despair, and bring them steadfastness and every excellence. May every being ailing with disease be free at once from it. May all the sickness that afflicts the living be instantly and permanently healed. May those who go in dread have no more fear. May captives be unchained and now set free. And may the weak receive their strength. May living beings help each other in kindness. May travelers upon the road find happiness no matter where they go. And may they gain without the need of toil the goals on which they set their hearts. May those who put to sea in boat or ship attend the ports that they desire. And may they safely come to shore and sweet reunion with their kin. Who lose their way and stray in misery find fellow travelers and safe from threat of thieves and searching beasts with eyeless and... May children and the old, the weak, the protectorless, bewildered in the wild and pathless wastes, and whose minds are dulled, and all who are insane, have pure celestial beings at their gardens. May all attend the human state and be possessed of wisdom, faith and love, with perfect livelihood and sustenance. May they have mindfulness through their lives. May everyone has unrestricted wealth, just like the treasury of space, enjoying it according to their wish, without a trace of harm or enmity. May beings destitute of splendor become magnificent and bright, and those worn down by toil and drudgery acquire great beauty and perfection. May all the women in the world attain the strength of masculinity. May the lowly come to excellence, and the proud and haughty lose their arrogance. And thus, by all the merit I have gained, may every being, living none aside, abandon all their evil ways, embracing goodness now and every. Bodhicitta, may they never separate and constantly engage in bodhisattva deeds. May they be accepted by disciples, by the Buddhas, and turn aside from what is demons' work. And may these beings, each and every one, enjoy an unsurpassed longevity, living always in contentment. May the very name of death be strange to them. On every side, in all 10 directions, may groves of wish-fulfilling trees abound, resounding the sweetness of the teachings spoken by the Buddhas and their Bodhisattva children. May the earth be wholesome everywhere, free from boulders, cliffs, and chasms, flat and even like a level palm, and smooth like lapis lazuli. And for many circles of disciples, may a multitude of Bodhisattvas rise in every land, adorning them with every excellence. From bird song and the sight, from shafts of light and from the sky itself, may living beings, each and every one, perceive the constant sound of Dharma. May they come into the presence of the Buddhas and meet with Bodhisattvas, offsprings of the same, with clouds of offerings unbounded. May the teachers of the world be worshipped. May kindly spirits bring the rains on time for harvest to be rich and plentiful. May princes rule according to the truth, and may the world be blessed with all prosperity. May medicines be strong and full of virtue. May healing spells be chanted with success. May spirits of the air that feed on flesh be kind, their minds imbued with pity. And let no being ever suffer pain. Let them neither ail nor languish, never doing evil. May they have no fear, nor suffer insult. And may their minds be ever free from sorrow. In monasteries, temples, and the like, may reading and the reciting widely flourish. May harmony prevail among the Sangha. May its purpose be all be fulfilled. May nuns have all their wants supplied. May quarreling
Thank you. Yeah, that.
I would like to express my thank you to and appreciation to all those who have been involved in organizing the teaching. And of course, all of you who have come here come with great interest, and all of you are busy. You know, each of you have your own things to do, and all of us who are here, whether
old, young,
also all of us who have gathered here, old or young. And each of us have within us a
person with Buddhist robe or ordinary dress, but everyone Buddha. Yeah.
So each of us have within ourselves quite a bright light of self-cherishment and rather shiny and bright light of self-cherishment, which, you know, which propel us to move in our own life to pursue various things and so on. But despite this, all of you have come here, we have all gathered here to reflect deeply upon the pros and cons of self-cherishment versus the cherishment of others, and you have listened to the lectures with deep interest, and for this I would like to express my appreciation.
Of course, the difficult to change, but still our mind is momentarily changing. Therefore, the new knowledge, new awareness, new conviction makes effect. So gradually, you will be more altruistic person. As a result, I think first the benefit goes to practitioner himself or herself. So that's because I can assure to you. So therefore, I think I often use if we be selfish, then should be wise selfish. Then our life, no matter what surrounding, but because of some kind of inner strength, your life becomes much, much more happier. So, I think my responsibility now completed to just to simply explain.